I'm Spencer Beckwith for KUNM. Summer in Santa Fe is a celebration of the beauty of the handmade. There's Indian Market, the International Folk Art Market, the Indigenous Fine Art Market, and the newest participant in that celebration bills itself as the greatest gathering of historic American Indian art in the world. The third annual Antique American Indian Art Show takes place in mid-August. Almost 70 traders and authorities will be on hand. And among them is the show's co-producer, dealer Kim Martindale. Kim, welcome.
Good to be here today.
You are not native yourself, but you have been collecting native art since you were in grade school, I understand. What fascinates you about this work?
Since my earliest recollections, I've collected American Indian material. I started out collecting beadwork, but then started collecting Northwest Coast pieces, Navajo textiles, pottery. So the whole genre and the diversity and the culture also really fascinates me. But really the way to that culture for me has been through the art.
What kind of objects will we be seeing in this show?
So you'll be really seeing the full range of historic material. And the thing that many people think about, they have one specific type of material, like maybe plains beadwork or eagle headdresses or something that they think about Native American culture. All of these kind of things will be at the exhibit. But even more, we will have things from the Eastern Seaboard, wooden bowls, burlwood bowls, or early moccasins, Northwest Coast. Coast weavings that were done that are very different than the Navajo textiles that we're very familiar with here in New Mexico and Arizona. California baskets, a huge culture of basket making throughout really the western United States. It extends to the East Coast as well, but really where the height of basket weaving developed was either the Apache and Pima down in southwestern Arizona, but really then when you moved into California, that's really the basket making area and up into Oregon and Washington. So you'll get this whole diversity of these amazing objects that I really feel are art in their own right. Many of them were not necessarily made as an art object, but I think that they've become that. And that's why they've been collected over the time and put into major museum collections. And I think that's really why I have a response to them. They have a beauty to them and a strength to them that compares to any art form.
We're saying antique. How do we define antique in this context?
So, yeah, in this context is the key, because I think that in dictionary definition, it's something over 100 years old. But really for American Indian material, we define it World War II. Pre-1950, right in that time period, anything prior to that, we call antique or historic material. And it's really that after World War II, I think that things started to change as to the purpose of why things are made, people putting their name associated with it. Unfortunately, earlier material, we don't have that. With new research and even the special exhibit we're doing at the shows, we'll showcase some of those names that have been found out more recently. So I think that really World War II was a big factor. Many Native Americans went out and fought in that war, and they saw a different vision of the world, and they had not seen that before. And I also think that after World War II, the United States changed greatly. Cars became much more commonplace in the middle class. And we had Route 66 developed from Chicago to Santa Monica. People started driving through areas that they had never driven through before. And even though there was certainly trains that went out west and there were stops along the way, but it really kind of developed a whole different time period in American history that influenced Native communities and had much more influence coming into them.
So we can be clear, the objects that you're talking about are going to be on display in this show, but also for sale.
Correct. There are some exhibitions that's just for the exhibition purpose, but the main gathering of all of these 70 exhibitors that really are have passion about this material and a lot of knowledge about this material that they want to share is that these are pieces that you can come and get engaged with and actually take it home with you at the end of the day, rather than I've been to many places and I love museums. museums and go to them, but, you know, there's pieces there that, God, I have such desire for, but they need to stay there, and that's a good thing. But here's a chance in a place that you can find that object or that amazing piece and hear the history and take it home with you.
Now, as I said, there are a variety of long-standing art shows, artist-based, each summer in Santa Fe. This is dealer-based or collector-based. What does that bring to the visitor that these other shows perhaps do not?
Well, I think it brings a curation to it. This show is really curated by the exhibitor, that those pieces that they've brought to their booth to showcase are really pieces that they've responded to in some particular way, and they're putting them together in a curation that's showing their interest in this material and wanting to share that. And many of these pieces are only in existence because somebody has put it into their collection at an early time and really cherished it, and then for some reason it comes back to the marketplace. And these people are looking all year long to find these special objects and bring them to Santa Fe for this show.
Kim, you mentioned a little bit about this earlier. You represent a generation of dealers, collectors, who really initiated the idea of these objects as works of art rather than as anthropological crafts. What was behind that change?
I think that change, and you're right, this really is a generation that's starting to do that. We see some exhibitions in New York City and the High Foundation in the late 1930s. There was one exhibition that said this material should be seen as art, not in an ethnographic setting, which it's always been. And then there was a Denver Art Museum that was really developed and built on the basis that this material is art. I think the definition of art expands in contemporary society, that these pieces really hold up to those definitions. And to me, it's something that has an intrinsic value to it when you look at it, beauty to it, craftsmanship. Some people would say, well, then that's just craft. But these pieces are beyond that. There are pieces that you would have got along Route 66 or something like that in an early time period that are just craft. They were just a form of an Acoma pot. It really wasn't an artist that made it. It was just somebody that was Acoma from that pueblo that did it. But the pieces that are really chosen for this show, an artisan really did those pieces. Their medium just happened to be clay, or it happened to be wool in a Navajo textile. And a well-known Los Angeles-based artist, Tony Berlant, who is probably, you know, one of the top artists in Los Angeles, he coined a term quite some time ago that I have borrowed from him and use, is that a Navajo textile really is a painting done with wool. And if you go back to some of the earliest Navajo textiles that will be on display at the show to transitional time period, they're using these amazingly bright colors and Germantown weaving, which is a special wool that if you come to the show, dealers can tell you and show you what that means and look at it. But it's these vivid colors, and they're putting a dark blue next to a bright yellow and then a green. So I just think that they really are amazing art pieces, and that's why they've even existed to today, because people recognized them as such. They didn't know to call them that, but now we're giving them their just due.
I wanted to mention, and you've said a little bit about it, that in conjunction with this art show, there is this wonderful exhibition of great work by Navajo weavers from the Gray Hills area north of Gallup. Could you give us a little idea of what that exhibition is going to be showing?
Yeah, the exhibition is Woven in Beauty, and it's Two Gray Hills or Totolina Trading Post. And really about 1920s in that time period, you're ending this transitional time of Navajo weaving, and you're going into a time period when trading post areas started to develop a distinct style. And the distinct style of Two Gray Hills or Totolina is all natural. So they're not using any dyes. They're just taking the colors of the sheep. And they're actually starting to breed sheep to get a variety of palette, a tan and a brown and a black and these different colors. And so they're raising their own sheep. They're shearing their own sheep. They're hand spinning it. And then Mark Winner, who's putting this exhibit together and runs Totolina and owns Totolina Trading Post now, has really spent the last last 10, 15 years of his life, tracing pieces back and stylistic approaches back to really discover these weavers' names of these early times. So it's a wonderful exhibit to really understand the history of this particular area of Navajo weaving.
I don't think most of us realize the importance of the trading post to the development of styles.
Yeah, and it was a very important development prior to really 1900, even though trading posts started really after the Navajo were released from this area called Bosque Redondo in the very south, released back into their traditional homelands. But at that point, we had devastated their sheep, their flocks, their fruit crops. So this thing of trading posts developed around the 1870s. But really by the beginning of the 20th century, these trading post owners started to really develop unique styles. So you have a ganado style, for example, from the town of Ganado and that trading post that used mainly really deep reds in it. Or Tisnas posts, which is another area in a trading post that developed that have very strong, bold designs and much wider borders used on them. So you have all of these trading posts really developing unique styles. And I think part of it was from an economic base, because then you could say you were building your brand, say, and then people that wanted a certain weaving in from the East Coast or other parts of the United States would say, you know, I really want to get just from this trading post. So you're really developing the weaver, the weaver's name, and the stylistic approach, which is much more of a Western concept in art, getting to know the weaver's name and having a distinct style about that piece of artwork.
Are you saying that there were certain individuals who curated and created a style, or that it was more of a collective movement toward a certain style?
I think there's always probably somewhat of a collective style, but I think the trading post owners really had a great influence on those styles that developed in that area. I certainly think that if there was a great weaver in that area and they were probably alive at that point, a trading post owner would go, wow, like this is a style that's kind of really a lot of weavers are starting to do. But certainly we see trading post owners' influence, and some of the designs are even influenced by Persian carpets or Caucasus carpets that these trading post owners had been aware of, but that very few Navajos at that point had ever seen these kind of textiles. And so they started showing images of these Oriental rugs, and these styles developed in certain areas.
Art dealer Kim Martindale is co-producer of the Antique American Indian Art Show, August 16th through the 19th at El Museo Cultural in Santa Fe's Rail Yard. Go to objectsofartshows.com. Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
For KUNM, I'm Spencer Beckwith.